Don't panic.
Catapult and propaganda.
The military-industrial complex.
The highly funded yet unofficial government agencies. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody. It's good to be back in the chair, although I have to say, last weekend we had an excellent guest.
Taylor Kent was a lot of fun to hang out with. We also got to hear about his ministry and his passion for trying to bring truth to the community of gamers and fan community for horror films and graphic novels, mm-hmm. comic books, that sort of thing. It's really a fertile field because there is a lot of supernatural in those elements of pop culture,
mm-hmm.
but it's usually told from the wrong perspective.
It is, and there's a fascination about it to all ages, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
I think primarily we think of it as preteens, teens, and young adults, but I think that there are an awful lot of middle-aged folks our age out there mm-hmm. who are also fascinated by just the glamour and, frankly, the false truths.
Yeah.
Now that sounds like an oxymoron, but they're peddled as truths. You know, here's what the Bible really says. Here's the mythology and the truth behind it. When in fact, the graphic novels and the sci-fi pictures that are out there, they are spinning some stories that are such blatant heresy.
Right. And there's a fascination for it. We see that, you know, in elements of the Matrix movies, which mm-hmm. borrowed liberally from a biblical biblical names, like the Nebuchadnezzar was their mm-hmm. ship, and Zion was their refuge, mm-hmm. and you know, so on. And then, of course, Dan Brown took elements of this and twisted it around to create an interesting puzzle for the Da Vinci Code. We see elements of it in the 300, which mm-hmm. used put Old Testament language, such as "Come, let us mm-hmm. reason together," which was God, which was God's words to the Israelites. He put that in the mouth of Xerxes, and in speaking to the Leonidas.
Well, exactly. And Taylor Kent is doing a different sort of branch of the same thing we do. You know, he's taking a look at areas that, for whatever reason, God has taken Taylor's life and his own. Perhaps childhood fascination. I'm not really sure if he got into graphic novels when he was a kid. I know you read comic books. They were called comic books.
Comic books then. Now they're graphic novels.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now they're more serious, I guess. But, you know, God is like that. He takes the things that who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
And he will use those things to his honor and glory. I mean, Moses grew up in the Egyptian house. That's where God placed him. And it was because of that relationship that he was able to go back later on and speak for the people, the Hebrew people, to the Pharaoh. He actually was able to get in and talk to him. God has taken things that I have learned in my lifetime, and I look back on it and I think, good heavens, you know, Lord, did you lead me into these things for your honor and glory, or are you just making lemonade out of lemons? I mean, all I know is that God, for whatever reason, he takes my own history and fascination with science fiction and fantasy, and he's opened my eyes to the truth about the lies.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done the same thing with you and
Absolutely.
Taylor Kent.
Right. It really is fascinating. And Taylor and I have talked about this, and we've talked about this before, too. When you look at the Bible with open eyes now, in the context of the divine counsel, paradigm.
Paradigm.
It really explains so much of what happened in the Old Testament. And then you look at the Old Testament with a writer's eyes, in that context, and the struggle between the fallen angels and Yahweh, Jehovah mm-hmm. God, for control of this creation that God has made. And you have all of the elements of the most popular fantasy science fiction stories today.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the fallen angels, you've got demons, dragons, witches, warlocks, angels fighting on the side of the righteous. And it is... you know, it is epic in scope, and yet most Christians don't see it that way.
Exactly.
They just don't see it because they can't rationalize it. They can't synthesize it with this westernized, scientistic worldview that we've been infused with.
And that is where I'm going to get on my high horse again. I get so angry that the pulpits are letting America down,
yep.
Letting our kids down, letting our teenagers down, letting you and me down, the parents down, because the pulpits aren't preaching the full scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
They've sort of knocked the supernatural out of
right.
the Old and New Testament. And by doing so, they set up these kids when the kids are drawn to something that you know talks about the supernatural. Sadly, those popular views mm-hmm. are not biblical. They're taking that supernatural and wrapping it around Satan's lies.
Exactly. Mike Heiser is working on an excellent project that he's been sharing with people who subscribe to his newsletter. And if you have not subscribed to Mike Heiser's newsletter, Michael S. Heiser, HEISER.com, $10 a year. It's a steal. He's working on a nonfiction book that reintroduces, remythologizes the Bible by explaining the divine counsel concept in layman's terms mm-hmm. and showing where in the Bible it's supported by the biblical verses. I just had an idea while we're talking here. Graphic novel, divine counsel, a retelling. Can you imagine this? A retelling of the Old Testament history in graphic novel form from the concept of the divine, with the divine counsel built in, showing the struggle.
Idea.
Okay. All right. I've got an idea.
I love it. That's a great idea. Can we do our stick figure drawings? Will that work?
We'll actually need people who can do those drawings.
That's a great idea.
Ooh. Okay. Well, we're going to talk about that some more behind the scenes.
We'll talk more about that later.
Lots of things
going on. But, you know, just to go back to this for a second, PID Radio, in case you are new, PID stands for Peering Into Darkness. And when, you know, we've received a few emails, you know, we do this every once in a while. Mm-hmm. We'll get an email from someone, and I respect every person who asks us this question.
Absolutely.
How can you guys go to movies that are so blasphemous? We agree. The movies that we talk about a lot
right.
of times, the television shows, the cartoons, I mean, you can just go from cradle to the grave on these media outlets, and there's so much blasphemy out there. I totally agree. However, your kids are watching it. Whether you know it or not, your kids are reading these
right.
graphic novels, they're going to these movies, and don't you want to know what's in them?
Yes, you absolutely should. And you can't. You cannot build a wall around your kids and protect them from all of this stuff. It's going mm-hmm. to seep through the cracks. You
exactly.
will not be able to seal them off and live inside this Christian cocoon,
exactly.
insulated from the world. They will get in.
And if you have no knowledge of it at all, and you want to talk to your child about it, that child is going to look at you and say, "You don't understand. You've never seen it."
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? We've had that conversation with our daughter. And what we have been able to do by reading the books that she wanted to read that we thought maybe this is not the best book as far as because it's really not the best book for a Christian child to read.
Right.
Derek read it with her.
Yep. And we talked about it.
And it gave us an opportunity to further solidify her foundation in Christ. And now when she has, I'll tell you what, Nicole, she could stand up and preach. And she has with some of her friends when they come to her and they ask her questions mm-hmm. about this movie or that movie, she'll sit down and she'll say, "Well, you know, it's really good, but let me tell you why it's wrong."
Yeah.
Let me tell you where they got it wrong with the Bible.
She's got a foundation, yeah.
yeah.
And, you know, this is what Paul wrote about when he said, we shouldn't be ignorant of the enemy's devices.
Mm-hmm.
For example, magic. Magic. As practiced by the occultist is absolutely real, and God is absolutely opposed
mm-hmm.
to it. But if you know, you got to know enough scripture to know that this is so, and then you've got to be able to identify it when it's being preached or taught in the pop culture that our
mm-hmm.
kids are exposed to.
Boy, magic is scary. Those little magic kits that they get when they're kids.
Yeah.
I mean, they start way back then.
And there are so many parents out there who profess to be Christians who just don't recognize the harm, don't recognize the threat, don't recognize the allure of this stuff. And it's all around us. You look at the popular shows on televisions like Charmed and, in fact, the new one on Sci-Fi that I actually kind of like, which is the Dresden Files. But
mm-hmm.
again, it's dealing with a wizard, and the Bible is very clear, you know, Exodus 22:18, Leviticus 19:31, 20:26, 20:27.
Mm-hmm.
God is absolutely opposed to this type of practice.
There is a very prevailing belief that's taken root within, even within, I'm afraid, within some Christian communities, that there is a white magic and a black magic.
Right.
And white magic, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Black magic, evil. It's all evil.
Right. No, you read the Bible, and again, those verses I just mentioned in particular, and God makes it very clear that this is not something you should dabble with. Why? Well, it gets back to the divine counsel paradigm,
mm-hmm.
Because it's tapping into giving into the allure and the promise of power, wealth, mm-hmm. whatever earthly delights given by the fallen. You're tapping into their realm and messing about with spirits that are diametrically opposed to God Almighty.
Well, speaking of God Almighty, an incident took place this last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I even took time to write a little article about it, about an incident taking place near a small town in southern Iraq called Abaddon.
Isn't this interesting? You've mm-hmm. heard by now of the 15 British sailors and Marines who were abducted at gunpoint by members of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. Isn't it interesting that it happened near an oil processing island called Abaddon, A-B-A-D-A-N.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Very close, very similar, isn't it, to the Aramaic word Abaddon, A-B-A-D-D-O-N.
It's very close to it. Now, I understand that just because they sound alike, but the first syllable of that, A-B, does stand for water, which mm-hmm. makes sense. It's very close to the water. I'd really like to know more about it. We're going to have to get Mike Heiser to send us a little note and say, Mike, can you look up the etymological foundations of this town name and tell us where it goes to?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know more about it. But it's all over the news now, and it took a while because when it first happened, let me just back up. In case you've heard nothing about this, by the way, today is March the 26th. It's Sunday. In case you have of 2007.
25, March 25th.
Oh, sorry, March 25th.
That's okay.
I was posting an article earlier for tomorrow, and so I had the 26th in my head. We'll talk more about that article later. But
mm-hmm.
Today, March 25, 2007, on March the 23rd, a group of British sailors who were inspecting cargo of a ship in the Persian Gulf. They were looking for, this is something you and I'll talk about here in a second,
mm-hmm.
I find it very interesting, car parts that were supposed to be smuggled. They had a tip-off that there was a smuggler afoot.
Smuggling car parts.
Smuggling car parts. Anyway, they were taken captive by the Republican Naval Guard
uh-huh.
from Iran, and taken over into Iranian waters, and at that point they were hauled away, and they're still now in custody,
mm-hmm.
and they are going to be tried
yes.
as spies.
Which has some very ugly implications. It could mean, in most nations, the punishment for convicted spies is death.
Exactly.
The Brits are obviously not happy about this.
It took a while for it to even make it to the
it
first
really,
24 hours. There was barely a blip.
It took a while for the story to percolate through the news. We were really surprised because this started on Thursday, and we were seeing stories leading this particular story in the news, such as the paternity test for Anna Nicole Smith's
mm-hmm.
child, and what was the other one that really drove me nuts? It was not Britney Spears, but it was another. You know, it was another story about some other pop star.
I don't know, but also, the big political lead story every hour, all day long now,
Alberto
is still
Gonzalez.
The Alberto Gonzalez story, which is a non-story as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, it's what I call a placeholder story.
Yeah.
It's a non-story with no real legs that they can sit and spin and spin and spin until whatever we're not supposed to look at
is
ready for showing,
ready for our consumption. So we're waiting to see what's going to happen. These sailors are in Tehran right now, we're told,
mm-hmm.
and it's possible that what Iran wants to do is swap these guys for the Iranian diplomats, in air quotes, that were captured by U.S. forces in the northern Iraqi city of, I believe it was Kirkuk or
mm-hmm.
Mosul, one of those two, a couple of months ago. What's really interesting. And by the way, before I forget, I need to give credit where it's due. David W. Lowe pointed out this island, Abaddon. like months and months and months ago as possibly being significant prophetically in what's breaking out, because it's in an area in this disputed waterway between Iraq and Iran. Mm-hmm. So it's conceivable that something would happen there that would trigger a wider Middle Eastern conflict. And as an aside, David Lowe's got a new book out called Then His Voice Shook the Earth, a follow-up to Earthquake Resurrection.
Oh, we'll have to see if we can get him on to talk about that.
But as this situation in Iran develops between Iran, the Brits, obviously we've got to be involved in this. There was a story that was published by U.S. News today on this, pointing out that back in September 6th, there was an incident on land on the Iraqi-Iranian border 75 miles east of Baghdad, in which a group of Iraqi border guards accompanied by U.S. troops were fired upon by a company of Iranian forces who captured four Iraqi soldiers mm-hmm. in this border guard patrol. And as far as we know, they still haven't been heard from.
Exactly. And there was barely a blip, if anything, on the news radar. I did a search for articles that I may have posted. I could
right.
find nothing. Of course, I think I took part of September off. But still, I found very little else in the news when we
right.
started searching all through Google. I think that it made very little noise over here because they weren't U.S. troops who were captured.
Right.
And this is awful. It's because they were Iraqi troops who were captured, and therefore, I guess the media thought, well, who cares?
Well, it could be. It could be. But it still seems to me that it's a huge story that U.S. soldiers were fired upon, rocket-propelled grenades.
By Iran.
By Iranian soldiers.
Who had crossed over, exactly.
Who were crossed over and were inside the Iraqi border. They fired on U.S. troops. This should have been a big deal. And it's not like it was a secret, because U.S. News says, you know, in this information obtained from the U.S. Army by U.S. News, and when you click on the PDF file, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes at PID Radio to show you what we mean, in the PDF file, you click on it and you see that it's a press release from the 101st Airborne's Information Office.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like this was a secret,
mm-hmm.
but it never made it to the press over here. Why? This is another example of what we mean when we say what is released by the media and when it's released
mm-hmm.
is every bit as important as the actual events themselves.
Well, you know, last September, the big stories of September, October was the election.
Yeah. Yeah, and it could be that we didn't touch it because nobody wanted to deal with it leading into the congressional elections.
That's probably it.
But you know, we've got the same sorts of things happening down on the Mexican border, which makes very little headway in the news. You know, guys, probably not Mexican military, but dressed in military garb on the Mexican side of the border, fired on U.S. Border Patrol agents last
mm-hmm.
week. How many of us heard about that? Not many.
No, you don't get much of it. No.
No, border security, if it's important. Stuff like that should be making the news. But
well,
someone's decided that it's not. And so, you know, Fox News goes back to another story about, you know, Brangelina. That was the big story.
Oh, that's right.
Brangelina adopting
another baby.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, you know what? PID listeners, I think, are pretty astute when it
yeah.
comes to watching what the shell game that's taking place in the news. You realize that when there's a story out there that seems to be a non-story that's just being milked for all it's worth,
mm-hmm.
that should have died, you know, like 10 minutes after it was
mm-hmm.
born. Look elsewhere.
Right.
Because it really is a shell game where, okay, look over here, when in fact the pea's under the walnut over here that I'm hiding from you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're so busy looking for the shiny one.
Yep. Well, meanwhile, things in Iraq don't seem to be getting better, even with the surge. There were some 70 people killed in attacks around Iraq over the weekend. And while that's happening, there's some disturbing stories that are coming out about in a couple of different directions. Number one, and this was a story that was posted connecting the dots by Sharon last week, the increasing dependence of the United States on mercenaries like contractors from Blackwater.
Blackwater, USA.
Yeah, in around Iraq. And there's a thread on this now at the PID forum with opinions going back and forth on whether this is a good idea or not. Let me just toss out a couple of reasons why I think this is a dangerous thing. Number one, Blackwater in particular is catching a lot of scrutiny because the founder, Eric Prince, is a member of a wealthy family from Michigan, heavily connected politically there. His sister is married to Rich DeVos of Amway fame.
Mm-hmm.
The DeVos family, of course, is the family that owns and runs Amway. They provided seed money to Gary Bauer to found the Family Research Council and to James Dobson to found Focus on the Family.
Mm-hmm.
So they're connected to some very prominent evangelical Christian organizations. So every time anyone takes a critical look at Blackwater USA, they look at Prince and his connections to Bauer, Dobson, and the Amway group family. And members of his immediate family are members of the Council for National Policy, which is the group of mostly professing evangelical Christians who see themselves as a counterweight to the Council on Foreign Relations.
Mm-hmm.
They take it upon themselves to interview and endorse Republican presidential candidates. George W. Bush got their blessing in 2000 before, you know, he ascended to the White House. I almost said throne, but don't want to get too snarky.
Why not?
So whenever there's an article that appears in the press about Blackwater USA and its dealings, Eric Prince is identified as conservative, evangelical, right-wing,
mm-hmm.
Christian,
mm-hmm.
Christian, Christian, Christian.
Exactly. In other words, any brush that I use to paint him black
is going to paint all Christians. So that's one area that bothers us. Number two is the fact that these guys are charging the government a lot of money for their services.
Yeah.
For example, it's come out that when they were in New Orleans, and they got to New Orleans after Katrina sooner than the government did,
mm-hmm.
and were immediately hired by the Department of Homeland Security to patrol the streets, which is disturbing enough that mercenaries were hired by the United States government to patrol a major American city. They were billing the U.S. government. It came out that they were paying their men $350 a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's about $84,000 a year, if my math is right. I guarantee that there aren't many American soldiers making that kind of money.
No, in fact, we'll get into that in a little bit, how the American soldier is being given the shaft.
Yes, leaning into the segue there.
Yep.
But they billed the government. Okay, their guys were getting paid $350 a day. They billed DHS $950 a day.
Mm-hmm.
$950 a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some other contracts that have been disclosed after, 2 years. Representative Henry Waxman of California, who I hate to agree with, very liberal Democrat, put in a request for information on what Blackwater USA was charging for their services in one particular contract in northern Iraq. And it took something like 2 years to get the information out because Kellogg Brown and Root said, we didn't hire them. We hired these other guys, and these other guys said, we didn't hire them. And it finally came out that, yes, they did. They were hired through like several layers of paperwork. They billed the government, or they were paid something like $2.5 million, but the government was billed like $19
million. Mm-hmm.
So somewhere in there, somebody skimmed off $16.5 million.
Well, you remember the contracts that were being handed out without any kind of review.
Right.
No bid contracts that just were being given out like candy right after Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And here we had Bill Clinton and Bush Sr., you know, walking around doing the, hi, we're buddies, we're out there for you, we're raising money for Katrina. Where did all that money go? Because the truth is, you take a look at New Orleans, and there are a lot of areas that are still just as bad today as they were, you know, within a week after Katrina.
Absolutely. And we keep hearing stories about how the American military, and this is coming now from guys that are high-ranking serving officers like General Peter Pace, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that it's going to take the U.S. Army and Marine Corps years to recover from our adventures in Iraq and Afghanistan because the equipment is breaking down and because the manpower is stretched so thin that it's going to take years of rebuilding and refitting equipment to bring our units back to full strength. While this is going on, out the other side of the government's, you know, pay window, we're shoveling tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to private contractors to supplement what the military should or could be doing. When Paul Bremer, the first, they called him proconsul, but I think that's just a joke, you know, U.S. being a Roman Empire, the first administrator in Baghdad landed on the ground there, he was not protected by American soldiers or Marines. He was protected by private security contractors from Blackwater USA.
Exactly. In fact, just last week, the Al-Qaeda was crowing about the fact that they had taken down a Blackwater USA convoy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in a convoy, right. And
in
it was a Blackwater copter was shot down in Baghdad just a couple months
exactly.
ago.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that unusual. In fact, a lot of the Blackwater deaths aren't even counted. So
no.
You're right. We are farming out. We're privatizing so much that takes place here in the United States.
Yeah.
Government is being run by corporations.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And there was an article by a fellow that named Jeremy Scahill, who's been tracking these guys for a while, Blackwater USA.
And he's very anti-Christianity.
He is very anti-Christian, but that's part of the point here, that Christians are being, and this is what Dave Duncan has been talking about with his New World Order scam, Christians are being set up as the bad guys in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
He writes that this is very similar to the Roman Empire's use of the Federati, and that the Blackwater USA guys, because of their tight connections to the conservative or neocon wing of the Republican Party, are in effect George W. Bush's Praetorian Guard.
Exactly.
Now, I'm not sure I agree with that 100%.
I do.
It certainly are some very disturbing parallels.
I do. I mean, take a look at Blackwater is everywhere, and what Blackwater isn't doing, Wackenhut's doing.
Mm-hmm. And there are other contractors out there. They've got a professional organization now that represents them in order to try to enforce, certain standards of professionalism, and of course to improve their image among the American public, so that we will agree with and support continued use of government dollars, our dollars, to hire these guys out for jobs that we just don't have the military manpower to do. Well, maybe if we took the money we were paying the contractors at $350 a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could make sure that all of our soldiers on the ground in Iraq have flak jackets and so forth.
Well, let's talk for just a minute about soldiers on the ground and money.
Yes, and where it's being spent.
There is a story that I linked to at CTD from, The Nation.
The Nation, right.
And it is a powerful piece. You'll have to read the balance of it at The Nation, because it's a piece that this guy did a lot of research on, and I want to give him full credit. So you'll get to read the first few paragraphs at CTD and then rest at The Nation, but we'll link to it. He tells the story of a soldier who was injured overseas, had a head injury in Iraq, came back over here, and he was told, "We're sorry, but your injury is a previously existing condition that is under Chapter 5, 13.
Yeah, Regulation 635-200, Chapter 5, 13. And because this specialist town was the soldier who was featured in the early part of the article to
John
sort of
Town.
Set the stage for the article as a whole. He was discharged from the military because the head injury that he suffered, which was very severe, his hearing never really recovered, which is kind of important for a soldier to be able to hear what's going on around him, but also caused memory failure and depression.
Mm-hmm.
Because of those things, the military said your condition, you're being discharged not because of your head injury, but because of a personality disorder.
Exactly, a personality disorder, this little catch-all that they say constitutes a pre-existing condition. Let's face it, they can say anything is a personality disorder.
Right.
And suddenly, you don't get any of your benefits at all. In fact, if you have not served out your contract, there's a possibility that when you are given your last check, that you're going to owe the government money.
Right, right. And it is that is just repulsive. I mean, this country should not be doing these men this way.
Mm-hmm. No.
It is oh,
and it's saving millions and maybe even tens of millions of dollars. I don't know how much money is being quote unquote saved by not paying benefits to men and women who have earned every penny of it and more.
Yeah. One military official quoted in the article said that the doctors at his base, and he would not allow himself to be named in the article, and I can see why. He says doctors at his base are doing more than withholding information from soldiers, information that, by the way, if you're discharged and you've not served out your term, you need to pay back your pre-enlistment bonus, your re-enlistment bonus. They're actually telling these soldiers the opposite, that if they go along and accept a discharge based on a 513, they'll get to keep their bonus and receive disability and medical benefits, none of which is true. This is just reprehensible, and it sounds like it's impossible to believe, but on the wake of the revelations about the medical care at Walter Reed Hospital.
At Walter Reed, that's exactly where I was going to go, because testimony in front of Congress over the last few weeks revealed about Walter Reed that, in fact, these soldiers were so miserable in those awful conditions that they would have done anything to get home. And there were soldiers who signed paperwork that essentially said, and they found this out later, the paperwork essentially said, by signing this, you agree that you will not get a dime out of us.
Mm.
And they were being misled. They were told, you know, you get to go home, but you have to sign yourself out. So sign here, and there you go.
Well, this is just flat evil, because for the most part, I would venture that most of these young men and women who volunteer to serve in the military do so because they believe in what they believe in, the values they're told the flag of the mm-hmm. United States represents. They believe in truth and justice and living in a representative republic, and when the chips are down and the military is put in the position of having to repay these men for the sacrifices that they've made, men and women,
mm-hmm.
We find too late that they're being treated like this. And we see this with the soldiers who complain of Gulf War syndrome,
mm-hmm.
that they're told it's all in your head.
The depleted uranium.
The soldiers from Vietnam and the way they were, Agent Orange was denied. This country has a pretty embarrassing record when it comes to how we treat mm-hmm. our military men and women when they return home from service.
Oh, it's disgusting. It's disgusting. I'm really getting sick and tired of... First of all, let me say this. I really do believe in an American spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in holding dear to the fact that we have the freedoms we do. When I was a kid and I would... When I would take a handful of soil... I mean, maybe it's my Scots-Irish heritage. I don't know what it is, but I would sometimes lift up a handful of soil and I would think, this is what matters.
Mm-hmm.
That is a bill of goods that's been sold to us
mm-hmm.
that this is what matters. This, spill your blood for this. And I say that with so much anger in my heart because I still believe in an American spirit. But that belief is being used
yes.
by Bush and Clinton and any of the people who are behind this war machine
mm-hmm.
so that their corporations can clean up
right.
left and right. They're making money off the blood of Americans and the blood of Iraqis and the blood probably of Iranians.
And too. Afghanistan's and blood of Central Americans and South Americans and... You know, going back, I mean, this is not a new thing, and it's not a partisan thing. This is something that our eyes are opening to of late. We really live in an oligarchy. We really do.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be wealthy in order to run for high elected office.
Mm-hmm.
You can still affect change at the local level. You know, I see the people, and I've had I've been blessed to interview many of the candidates for local public office here in Columbia over the last couple of weeks, and I've got more coming in this week. And even the state representatives, I've been impressed with them. They're not any of them doing it for the money. In fact, you can't in Columbia because we don't pay our aldermen or our mayor, but they're doing it because they truly want to serve and represent and help this community, this area grow.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get beyond that, once you get to the national level, once you get to the international level, you're moving in a whole different atmosphere there. And you need to be wealthy or supported by wealthy people, beholden to wealthy or wealthier people for what power you have.
Exactly, because the only way you're going to make it into that office is
right.
to get there, and you need the money to get there.
You need the money to get there.
You've got to buy advertising,
yep.
and you've got to get... Oh.
And you need the people who can pull the levers behind the scenes that clear the path for you
mm-hmm.
and open doors. And so what do we have? Well, we've got the North American Union, which appears to be taking shape behind the scenes, being coordinated by business leaders in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. You've got multinational companies, the oil companies, working on the... if there was any question as to why we were actually in Iraq, and you know, I'll say again, I have no problem with Saddam Hussein being removed from power. He was an evil man.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that the new oil revenue sharing bill that the Iraqi parliament is working on, that its first draft was in English instead of Arabic,
mm-hmm.
ought to be a big greasy clue as to why we are really in Iraq. It's not about creating a representative republic or a democracy
mm-hmm.
in Iraq, and we won't even go into what shape that would take anyway, even if they would accept it, which I don't think they will. The fact is we're there to negotiate better deals for ExxonMobil, Texaco, Chevron, Texaco, BP.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, that's
Halliburton,
why we're
there.
Yeah.
And
the fact that Halliburton is moving its international headquarters from Houston to Dubai.
To Dubai.
oh, well, you know, maybe they want to be closer to their bases of operations where their contracts are. Well, they've always had contracts all over the Middle East. They're an oil services company. And that's where the oil is.
In fact, I tell you what, if I were going to really go in a conspiracy direction with that, I would say, what do you know about Houston that I don't?
Yeah, it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. There are an awful lot of movies where Houston gets either slammed by a monster hurricane or just nuked.
Yeah, yeah. It makes you wonder. I mean, I know that questions have been raised about Captain Eric May, but this is one of the contentions he's raised for a long time, that this is a place that's going to get hit.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's keep an eye on 24 to see
when
if
the next
that happens to be
up.
One of the... Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
Well, Halliburton is moving, and again, it just shows that these oligarchs, these wealthy men and women, have no loyalty whatsoever to the United States. It is only loyalty to power, and power is money. And money, the coin of the realm, is oil.
Which leads us to the story that just came out today about the International Monetary Fund, your IMF friends.
Yeah.
We're your friends.
It's the only bank in the world that doesn't have an ATM where you can make a withdrawal. But it is the bank that pretty much determines the economic fortunes of...
most of the world. Of all of us.
Yeah.
And they have declared that the dollar just is worth too much.
Yeah, needs to devalue. And I'm still trying to figure out exactly why they want to depreciate the United States dollar.
You asked me that question earlier and when I first brought up the story, and I said, you know, I'm not really sure. Let me just read what this says. The International Monetary Fund will say further depreciation by the U.S. dollar is needed to help correct global imbalances in its latest World Economic Outlook.
Yeah, and now
global imbalances.
Now, what those are, I don't know.
I think it means something about their portfolio. Somehow, you know,
we got stuck holding too many dollars,
or
we sold off a bunch of dollars.
We sold off our dollars. We want the people stuck with the dollars to have less, you know, money in their portfolio. And when the dollars get really, really low, and we think they should come back up, then we'll buy some.
Mm-hmm. Now. The dollar last week hit a two-year low against the euro, and it is still continuing to depreciate. Meanwhile, the yuan, which is the Chinese currency, is appreciating.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Iran dumped dollars.
Iran
last
dumped
year.
Dollars. China was dumping
they
dollars last
euros.
Year.
Also, we keep hearing, we've not talked about this for a while, but the notion of an oil bourse in either Iran, now I know Russia was going to start an oil bourse, that these wouldn't be trading in dollars.
That's true. And what's interesting is we've not heard any stories about that. This was supposed to be a big deal about a year ago at this time.
Yeah, well, he also said that the Imam al-Mahdi was going to appear before the vernal equinox.
Right.
I have not seen him.
That's right. We're still waiting. Where's that Mahdi?
I don't know. I've got a sign out front that says, Mahdi, you know, welcome here. Come on in. Announce yourself. And not a word. Not a peep.
Yeah. So that's still something we can continue looking for.
You know, I laugh about that, but the fact is that they genuinely believe in this as their prophecy. I mean, that's their Messiah in many ways. And what's chilling is that they believe that Jesus Christ is going to, you know, just bow down to this guy.
Right. And say all that stuff about me dying on the cross, that was just
that was PR. It was just, they got it wrong.
Yeah. Other stories in the news. We mentioned a couple of shows ago about the U.S. expert on Alexander Litvinenko, who was shot to death near his home, Paul Joyal. But last week, because we kind of took a left turn talking with Taylor Kent, we didn't mention the death of the critic of Vladimir Putin, journalist over in Russia, who died after falling from a fifth-floor window of his apartment building. Ivan Safronov was the military affairs columnist at the Kommersant newspaper. Now, this is an interesting story for a couple of reasons. First, the actual details of the story. There were a couple of young ladies that live in that apartment complex who heard his body hit the pavement like a thud. They called emergency services, and they were told, we don't have time to go picking up every drunk who falls down in the snow. Call us back if he's still moving in half an hour.
Call us
back in half an hour if he's still moving. Yeah, in half an hour later.
And then we'll come make sure he doesn't move anymore.
Yeah, well, he was dead by the time they got back there. But the other interesting point, and this connects back to Litvinenko, Boris Berezovsky is the owner of the Kommersant newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Berezovsky owned the house in which Alexander Litvinenko lived.
Mm-hmm.
So That was a story that
came out a couple weeks ago. Isn't it really interesting? He's one of the oligarchs.
Yeah.
You know, the world, it really is run by an oligarchy, and there may be regions to it, whatever you want to say, but it's we are moving toward a one-world government so fast,
mm-hmm.
which leads me into the next story. Tony Blair wants desperately to be the president of the European Union.
Yeah.
President Tony Blair.
Yeah, Bill Clinton wanted to run, but they told him that he just wasn't eligible, I guess.
No, you really need to be. You know what? I think he would be running for that if he thought he could get in, but I suspect you have to be from a member nation of the EU.
Yeah, you know, well, Ireland might make him an honorary member. He's really big over there.
That's true.
But Blair wants to create a permanent presidency instead of... Now, what do they have now? They've got like a rotating
every year.
Yeah, in a different nation.
Angela Merkel.
Right. Merkel.
And she, by the way, I don't have this story at CTD, but I saw this story. She's receiving an honorary degree from a Hebrew university. Now, what are the odds?
That is interesting. So, we'll see what happens.
What a world.
Permanent presidency was floated when the EU Constitution was put out for vote a couple of years ago, which, of course, was promptly shot down by voters in France and Holland.
But keep an eye on it, because Angela Merkel has announced that during her presidency, that thing will be done.
Yeah, she's intent on making the EU Constitution law for the member states of the European
mm-hmm.
Union. Now, what was the deal? The next meeting of the EU is taking place in Turkey?
No, the next meeting of the Bilderberg Group.
Oh, the Bilderberg. That's right.
That's the buzz. And I think much of it is based on a story that actually came from a Turkish newspaper.
Yeah.
There are people who make this their life's work. And I say, go, because, you know, frankly, you and I rely upon people who do things like this. There are people who are literally calling hotels in Istanbul.
Mm-hmm.
Calling around to the ones that are really nice, the kind that the Bilderberg folks would like to stay in, very upscale and with lots of security possibilities. They're calling these hotels and finding out when they're booked. Oh, you have lots of availabilities during this week? Well, it can't possibly be then. Generally, the Bilderberg meeting is in May or June of each year. So they're checking it out, and they're trying to figure out exactly when it's going to happen.
And that would be an interesting location, because, of course, the Bilderberg Group is primarily elites from Western Europe and North America, Canada and the U.S. in particular.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a few Asians and a few Africans and from the Southern Hemisphere that have attended in recent years. But primarily, it's the wealthiest of the elites in Europe and and North America.
I think the
Turks really want into the EU in a big, big way.
Big way. And that's why, frankly, you're going to see a lot of information on CTD about Turkey from time to time. In fact, a few days ago, I had several stories with regard to the Armenian genocide.
Yes. Turkey's
that they deny vehemently.
Yeah. Turkey's very significant. As we've noted before, the letters written by Jesus and revealed to John in the book of Revelation were all to churches located in modern-day Turkey.
They are, and you know, if you've never considered this, ask yourself why those churches. Well, you know, the usual answer is, well, each of those churches represented a particular trait that Jesus wanted to make sure he mentioned mm-hmm. with, you know, regard to traits throughout the body of Christ throughout the centuries. Why not pick out Rome? Or
Alexandria,
Jerusalem, or Corinth,
Antioch.
Yeah, there were Damascus. a lot of huge churches that I would have thought would have been the ones he'd have chosen, because they'd been established earlier.
Mm-hmm.
They had some famous people who were bishops. Instead, he chose the seven churches in what was called Asia Minor. It's modern day Western Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Turkey is becoming extremely important. And I think this Bilderberg Group meeting this year is something you really need to take a look at. In fact, I think keep your eyes open and keep praying about what takes place over the next few months, because in addition to the EU crowing about supposedly their 50-year anniversary, which mm-hmm. I think is kind of a joke, this year, this June, will mark 40 years since the Six-Day War.
The length of a generation.
Yep.
That's very interesting. Very interesting indeed.
Mm-hmm.
The Bilderberg Group has been a launching pad for many prominent politicians who are vetted by these guys at this meeting and then suddenly go on to greater things. Tony Blair, Bill Clinton basically came from nowhere.
John Edwards.
John Edwards was at the Bilderberg Group meeting in 2004. It will be interesting to see who makes it through this year's session and is vetted and moves on. Senator Chuck Hagel has been a regular attendee over the last few years, and he has made some noise about putting his hat in the ring as a Republican presidential candidate. So he would be an interesting guy to watch. Ralph Reed was at that Bilderberg Group meeting in 2004. Ralph Reed was former leader of the Christian Coalition, ran for lieutenant governor in Georgia, and you know what? I didn't follow up on that story, and I don't know if he won that election or not, because it came out that he was taking, he had taken a bunch of money from Jack Abramoff.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, another good Christian.
Abramoff,
so
please.
There are a lot of careers that are made in this group. They always seem to invite two, three, four up-and-coming politicians from the U.S., U.K., Canada, who then go on to bigger things. I'd like to go back now and look and see whether Stephen Harper, the current PM of Canada, has been at Bilderberg Group meeting.
Oh, that's a really good question, especially since the group met in Canada last year.
Yeah. So that is something to watch, the Turkish connection to the Bilderberg Group this year and who may emerge from that as a brighter political star than he went in. Senator John Corzine, someone else to watch. There are an awful lot of guys formerly of Goldman Sachs who appear at these meetings.
That's a good point.
A lot of guys. And, you know, the last three secretaries of the Treasury that the United States has had were former Goldman Sachs, but Corzine was former CEO of Goldman Sachs as well. He's now governor of New Jersey. And I suspect setting himself up for a presidential bid.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I really do.
Yeah.
One more thing I want to touch on tonight, and it's, again, I got to get this soapbox over here. Come here. The way the economy is going, I know we all talk about it, but if you don't already see it, if you haven't been listening to PID Radio, if I haven't thumbed you over the head enough about it, we are being set up to go bankrupt. You and I and the entire United States of America, we are being sold. In fact, I would say that we were sold long ago and we just don't realize it. But there are so many subprime loans that are defaulting now. Foreclosure is at the door, and there are many, many young families and maybe some even older families that have had to refinance. The refinancing trap. And you and I fell into it.
We did.
We did, but we're out of it now. And I don't know that we've said this over the air, but our house was foreclosed.
Yep. Yep. The old bunker was foreclosed and sold on the courthouse steps in January. It's not something we...
You know what? And God brought us to that, and it was a lot of it was had to do with the move, and the house didn't sell, and this and that. But that aside, we weren't really left off, hanging with it. I mean, we've got a nice place to rent. We're doing okay, and Derek is loving his job. But what kills us is we look at these young families that have toddlers and grade school kids and dogs, and they maybe don't even own their cars, and the house is being foreclosed, and where on earth do you go?
Yeah. Yeah, God has provided for us. I mean, we're fine, and we feel no remorse about
the way
things
happened. No, in
fact,
the house was foreclosed on your birthday. We actually celebrated.
It was a relief, frankly.
It was. It gave off our backs. But, you know, the fact is we were already in another place living. Had that happened while we were still living in the house, you know, that's what's happening. That's the reality on the doorsteps of many American homes.
Yeah, and thankfully, we've got family members that I feel confident we would have been able to land.
But you know what? There are many people who are so proud.
Yes.
They either don't want to say anything about it, or they simply don't have the family.
Or don't have the family.
Can't afford it.
Right, exactly. Don't have that kind of support network.
So but what kills me is that it's a trap. It's not just that Mr. and Mrs. American Citizen have been stupid. It's that we have been lured.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch television and just take note of how many ads you see out there. You know, aside from all the ads we see, you know, convincing us that we need to buy this and subscribe to that in order to achieve, you know, happiness. But all of the ads there that are telling us that having equity in your home is a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Hey, take that equity that's just sitting there.
Yeah, you want to get that equity out of your home and go buy that boat you want. Or, hey, pay off those high-interest credit cards. We all hear that one.
Right.
And what happens is these young families or whatever family goes out, you refinance, you maybe roll some over other debt over into it, and they tell you, you know what, we can refinance for even a new home.
Mm-hmm.
We can do a 90-20. So you're actually doing 110% of your loan value. Or we can do an 80-30, or we can do a 90-10, just do 100%. But the fact is suddenly you maybe have two mortgages, and the first one is at one rate, the second one is at a much higher rate.
Almost credit card rate,
exactly. And I mean, we're talking high rates, and those rates are adjustable most of the time. And many times all you're doing is paying the interest on the loan, and suddenly you are barely able to make the payments, and if anything changes in your life...
If the market softens for real estate, which has happened over the last year.
Which is what's
happening. You find a lot of people who are upside down in their homes.
Yep. And that's what happened to us. And so that's why we feel very, you know, strongly about this. You know, again, God, he held us in his hands, and we are just so grateful to be in his hands today. And we know that he's going to continue doing that with anybody who puts, you know, faith in him to take care of them. But we're mad. I'm mad because it's, again, it's not just because these people were greedy or wanted, you know, it's this bait and switch.
Mm-hmm.
Company A, it's not like the old days of It's a Wonderful Life where the savings alone is where you went to buy your house and you put down 30 or 40%.
Right.
Or minimum of 20.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times
right.
people put down half. You put down a certain percentage, and the community was responsible for whether or not you could pay off your home, because that's the local savings and loan.
Right.
No. This is what's called an originator,
mm-hmm.
a mortgage originator, and company ABC gives you the money, and then they immediately, sometimes same day, sell it.
Turn around and sell it to an investor.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really bizarre is when these investors will take up packages of these loans, bundle them together, and sell them off as securities. And because now it's treated as a secured investment, even though there may only be a 5 or 10% or even a negative number in terms of the actual equity in the individual properties that are attached to those notes, they're treated as secured investments.
Mm-hmm.
And then under SEC guidelines, you can actually borrow against those.
Yes.
And borrow like 3 or 4 times the value of these notes. So suddenly you've got, you know, somebody who's put, you know, a minimal amount down on a home.
Mm-hmm.
And then the value of that home is turned around and inflated to 3 times its value in form of other loans. Suddenly you've got all this money out there attached to a small percentage of equity in a house.
Exactly.
It is a house of cards.
It truly is.
And it ties back to what you'd said before with the IMF wanting to devalue the American dollar.
Yes.
It's almost... Oh, we got the foil hat headphones on now.
Oh, boy,
the tin foil headphones. It almost as though they're deliberately setting up the American economy to collapse.
Doesn't it feel like that?
Any other way doesn't make any sense. I can't believe that many people are that stupid.
I linked to a story from last year that Jerome Corsi wrote. He is prophetic in this. He said that he believes that when the American dollar totally collapses,
mm-hmm.
that the Amero.
Yep. Part of the North American Union.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, the Amero will become the currency.
I honestly think that it's part of the plan that somewhere along the line the United States has to collapse totally.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be why you see the rats leaving the sinking ship like Halliburton moving over to Dubai.
That may well be the reason. We just have a couple minutes left. I want to toss in one final story because I can't remember if we talked about this. But
is it
even
a rant?
If we have, no, it's just a very quick hit. But it's a mystery, it's a puzzle. And it's becoming a little more widely known now. Colony collapse disorder.
Oh, yeah, the bees.
Bees, honeybees in the United States and in Europe are disappearing. They're not dying. They're disappearing. Beekeepers in the state of Missouri here met in Jefferson City just this past week, and they said that up to 80% of the bees have disappeared in certain areas of southwest Missouri and in and around Kansas City. About 50% of them have disappeared. beekeepers are going to their hives now that the weather's warming up. Instead of seeing, again, it's not like an illness affecting the colony where the bees are dead in or
weird.
They're
just gone.
They're just gone. Disappeared.
And they leave the queen behind.
They leave the queen and a few juveniles behind, not enough to maintain the colony. What's really weird is that other bees and scavengers, other insects, aren't raiding the empty hives.
Exactly. So what is going on? There is something very mysterious. You're right. This is a great mystery. It's going to be one that's going to hit your pocketbook, folks.
Yep.
Because a lot of the crops like cucumbers and
blueberries, watermelon, cantaloupes, cucumbers, corn, walnuts, certain trees.
Yeah, a lot of flowering plants that form their fruit from the flower, they have to be pollinated by bees. And
yes.
That's why a lot of these farmers and the grove people, they hire these companies that go around all over the United States, and they put their bees out for a while, and they take care of the job. Well, if there are no bees, it won't get done, and you won't get the fruit, and you won't get the vegetables, and suddenly the prices are going to be sky high. And honey is also being affected.
Sure, absolutely.
I took a look at the story from Sue B., you know, the company that puts out a lot of the honey that we buy in the grocery store, and apparently their suppliers have reported an 80 to 90% loss of bees. So honey is going to go way up. Our tip, go buy stuff now.
Yeah. Yep, stock up, because we will start to see this when the crops start maturing later this year. But the beekeepers are already very aware of this, and they don't know what's causing it. They're blaming mites. They're blaming the chemicals used to kill the mites. They're blaming genetically modified crops. They're blaming chemicals used to treat crops. You're changing the magnetic field of the earth. Nobody really knows.
We don't know, because there are no bees to examine.
Do a Google search, colony collapse disorder. You'll be shocked at what you see. So that's the mystery for this week. And
by the way, if you have dog food, take a look at it, because you want to make sure you're not giving poison dog food to your pets.
Oh, amen to that.
Dogs and cats.
Put a link to that article in the show notes at PIDradio.com. Forum is open, peeringintodarkness.com/forum. And, of course, you can always email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
Don't forget that next Sunday, April 1st, unless something happens that we have to do a show the day before, Derek is flying out of town, so we won't be able to do a show on that day. So we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we'll put up an archive show next week and look forward to that. Until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Over 6,000 years ago, the citizens of Mesopotamia encountered them.
Down through time, tens of thousands of people on every continent of the world have etched their likeness on the walls of caves, chiseled statues of them from solid stone, and prayed prayers to their highest gods to be delivered from them.
But prophecy says they will return. And at a time when Babylon, modern Iraq, and Iran is invaded and destroyed. This spring, exclusively from RaidersNewsUpdate.com, we'll tell you what you need to know about them. in the book-length ebook, Stargates, Ancient Rituals, and Those Invited Through the Portal.
Catherine Adamson thought she was going back to her quiet hometown of Eden, Indiana, to settle the affairs of her late Aunt Celeste. Instead, she discovers that Eden has literally gone to hell. Two high school students have disappeared, leaving behind only a running car and a bloody shoe. Strange lights have appeared over the town, and the fields of a local farm are marked with blackened circles. Eden County Hospital reports record births, incredibly large babies joining the ranks of a growing number of giants. Many of Eden's leading citizens have been hiding evil secrets, but their behavior has been closely watched by the mysterious Dr. Apollo Bell, head of the Mount Hermon Institute. All of Eden is a war camp, and citizens must choose sides in an eternal battle. Catherine is reunited with her old flame, Joshua Carpenter, the publisher of the Eden Chronicle. They quickly learn their strongest ally may be John Thundercloud, a legless old Winnebago Indian who spends his days writing line after line in a library full of tattered diaries. It's Winds of Evil by Sharon K. Gilbert, book one of the Laodicea Chronicles. Available now online and at bookstores everywhere.